Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. If this is your first time, please make yourself at home as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, lasting health, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, you can all do me a big favor. Please check out some of our past shows at answersforthefamily.com to hear some informative and entertaining guests, as well as some dynamic co-hosts as they discuss ways for you and your loved ones to be happier, healthier, and more at peace. Now, I'm also looking for some show ambassadors who will forward at least one of our shows to your social media group or someone you know who can benefit from a particular show. And I want you to know I truly appreciate it. And this is just another way that we, together, can make a positive difference in the lives of others. And I guarantee you, after you listen to this show, you are going to want to share with it. So, with us, as usual, is my incredible co-host, international speaker, author, and kindness expert, Gabriella Von Ray. And the question that's on many of our listeners' lips are, Gabriella, where in the world are you?
Thanks, Alan. I am still in France because I am dealing, like I said last week, with a family member who is getting a lot older. So I'm in the south of France, and later this week I will be moving to Brittany, which is also part of France, on the other side. That's on the west coast here.
So now share for those that this might be their first time, share with them a little bit about the kindness tour and the kindness movement.
Absolutely. So the kindness movement is actually born out of the simplicity that we live in a world where we really need kindness. And when we say kindness, I do not mean at all the kindness that makes you maybe smile and say, oh, that doesn't exist. I'm talking about daring to be kind. That's why we call it the Dare to Be Kind movement, because when it comes to really wanting to help another person and giving them your time and your effort, that takes a lot of daring. And unfortunately, often we do not do that anymore. You know, Alan, in what kind of incredible fast-paced world we live, and it's always running, and we don't take care to stop for the ones we love. And we definitely don't take care for the ones that are total strangers on our path. So this movement says that if we are kind and if we take the steps to put kindness in our daily lives, that we believe that we create safer communities. And the kindness has such incredible ripple effect. Just to give you a slight little anecdote, I brought back a rental car yesterday and my American credit card wouldn't work on Sunday to fill up the gas like you have to. And so I left the gas half full and I apologized profusely. And someone said, are you the young lady with a sick father? And I went, yes. And they said, it's free. It's on us.
Wow.
See, that was totally out of the blue. Someone had written something apparently in my rent file of the car, and so they didn't charge me an arm and a leg. They just charged me a little toe, and I was smiling. You know, it really makes your day.
Yes,
because
absolutely,
it's something so beautiful. I was more encouraged, Alan. I just felt good, you know.
Yep. And the thing is, and something you touched on that I think is so important, is we're talking about authentic kindness. You know, yes, that's absolutely the key. And, you know, to me, that's one of the things I love about you. You're one of the most authentic people I've ever met. And I'm just so glad that you're out there. And again, for those that don't know, Gabriella has dedicated 2 years of her life to travel around and spread kindness. So if you are near where she's at or anywhere in, you know, along the path that she's going to be on, get in touch, go to the website. Dare to be kind movement. Okay.
We would love for you to do that. We're so accessible. We're everywhere. I have 1 week delay because I was supposed to be in flight today. I will fly out of France tomorrow, get back to Chicago, and then I will obviously take off for our next location. So if you're interested, please let us know, because there's so many things you can do to help us. They're just too much to mention. But I would love to ask you, Alan.
Okay.
May I ask you a
sure
question? I heard you were up to doing something amazing this weekend, and I would like to hear more so that I might know what you're up to.
Well, and thank you for that. And yes, I had an honor. I was honored to be MC, one of the MCs at the See It, End It Film and Art Festival. And this was an inaugural event. It was a 2-day education and awareness event through film and arts that was highlighting the dangers of human trafficking. And I just got to tell you that, it was so wonderful, and I enjoyed spending time with so many caring filmmakers and so many incredibly caring organizations that are really fighting this horrific crime. So it was, you know, although we were dealing with a very difficult subject, there was a lot of rejoicing over the victories, you know, and because we had some, some people there that had been engaged in that, and they were now out and they were free and they were helping to spread to other people what they can do to keep it from happening to them. So again, I was just very honored, and it was a blessing to be there.
Hey, can I ask you just one more time?
Sure.
What was that called? See It and End It?
Yeah, it's called See It, End It. In fact, that's a great point. So if anybody wants to know more about it, you can go to the website.
Mm-hmm.
So it's seeitendit.com. Go to the website.
I am going to look it up immediately.
Oh, that's great.
Because this is so, I know you talked about it last week too, but people forget that without you, this is what a detective told me once, and you're a detective, Alan, so you know this even better than I do. But without you, the everyday people like you and me and everyone, we cannot find it. Because if you see something suspicious, right, Alan?
Yep.
Don't think, you know, I don't think like, oh my gosh, I'm being a busybody. But if you see, for example, in this case, it was a woman that saw every daytime, the mattresses were put next to a garage of a normal house in a normal rural area in America. And it looked like they were drying or something on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And then every night they were gone. And this happened over and over. And this woman got really suspicious. She called this special investigator. And that was a whole house of human trafficking. So, you know, she made that difference in that phone call in the lives of others. Right, Alan?
Definitely. And I'm so glad that you brought that up. And again, if you go to the website, the See It, End It website, there's a phone number that you can call that mm-hmm. Somebody will take that call. Somebody will help you get that information to the right people. So, yes, you're absolutely right that it's, you know, we can't do it alone. There's no group of law enforcement or special investigation or any type of group that can do this without everybody out there using their eyes, using their ears, using their senses to recognize that something's just not right. And, you know, make the call. And as Gabriella just said, it may be one of those situations and you may have just saved somebody's life.
Yep, absolutely.
So, So anyway, so Gabriella, I know that this is one of those days in which you're going to be on the move. So again, stay with us as long as you can.
I will.
You know, and again,
I will stay a little bit because okay. I'm really excited about your guest.
Well, as I know that you are and as I am, so let me share with our audience a little bit about our guest today, which is Valerie Condis Field. And she's the head coach. And listen to these numbers, okay, of the 7-time NCAA champion, 22-time regional, and 18-time Pac-12 champion UCLA women's gymnastics team. I mean, that's just phenomenal in itself. Now, she was inducted into the UCLA Athletic Hall of Fame in 2010. She's 4-time National Coach of the Year. She was recently named the West Regional Coach of the Year and the Pac-12 Coach of the Century. I mean,
oh my goodness.
You know, and this just all comes from having an incredibly solid track record as a coach. Now to add to that, now a lot of people, you know, when you think of coaching, some people just recently, you know, on YouTube videos, there was a coach that was being very aggressive and stuff, and there was a lot of, you know, a lot of communication and feedback in regards to that. Well, it might be a little different in this situation because Valerie is affectionately known by her gymnast as Miss Val. And her reputation is just only one reason that 46 former U.S. national team members have come through her program and why half of the last 2 Olympic teams have committed to UCLA. So, and, you know, to add to that, now, those that I have heard from, spoken to, or read say that Valerie's coaching success is due to her extraordinary leadership and mentorship of young student athletes and the way in which she uses gymnastics as an avenue through which to teach valuable life lessons, and some of which we will talk about today as we discuss her new book, Life is Short, Don't Wait to Dance. So with that, Valerie, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much. Wow, I was honored before I heard you and Gabriella speaking, and now I'm just blown away. I'm at my computer. I am on the CUendit site, and there aren't words to tell you how honored I am to be speaking with both of you.
Well, thank you for that. I'm sitting here just thrilled to be talking with both of you. You have
me too.
Really. I mean,
I'm thrilled to speak to Val.
Yeah, I mean, Valerie, you've achieved so much. And I'm a local Southern California person, so I'm familiar with your work, and and maybe more familiar than a lot of other people. So why don't we start maybe with you sharing a little bit about your coaching journey, because I don't think everybody fully knows, you know, after reading all of those great accolades, that there was a journey there.
Mm-hmm. The fun part about all the accolades, and I love to start my speaking engagement by sharing all of them, because it really sounds like I'm bragging when I do. But the most fun fact is, yes, I'm inducted into the UCLA Athletic Hall of Fame. Yes, I'm the Pac-12 Coach of the Century. Yes, 7 national championships, blah, blah, blah. But the most fun fact really is that I've never done gymnastics. And I was a ballet dancer growing up. And I came to UCLA in 1982 as a 22-year-old, fresh out of the ballet world. And they offered me a full scholarship to be their choreographer, their dance coach. And I did that for a few years, graduated, and then I was called into the athletic director's office, and she just said, "We're making a coaching change, and I want you to be the new head coach." And I literally laughed at her, and I said, "Do you understand? I don't know the first thing about gymnastics." And she said, I've watch how you work with the student athletes. I like how you're firm, but you're compassionate. And I trust you'll figure the rest out. And that's all I got.
In other words, wing it.
But may I
figure it out.
But Val, may I interject with something? Yes. I'm from the Balo background, and that is not nothing. So for anyone who doesn't understand what she's saying, the ballet world is disciplined. So you had that. You had a lot going for you as a discipline. And as a choreographer, you already know how hard it is that they're all in unison, just like a gymnast needs to be too, right? It you know, everything is choreographed, right?
Yes. And, you know, so, Gabriella, it's true. When I, the interesting part of the journey was the first few years, because I didn't grow up in the world of athletics.
Yeah.
And I wasn't, you know, it wasn't all about winning.
No.
I tried to mimic other head coaches. And I figured I grew up on the stage so I could act. So I just acted like other head coaches. I was not true to myself at all. Mm-hmm. And consequently, our team did horribly. And it wasn't until I thought what you just said, what do I bring from the classical ballet world? And yes, it's about performance, it's about working hard, it's about being able to work through pain. But then I realized the similarities with dancers and gymnasts. You know, we grow up in leotards. We grow up with body shaming. We grow up with being surrounded by or having disordered eating or eating disorders. It's really not fun to go through puberty as a young woman having to get in a leotard every day. And the most important thing I realized was I was always one of these dancers that when I was standing in the wings, I was so calm and excited to get on stage versus some of my fellow dancers that were throwing up in the wings because they were so nervous. And I thought, you know, even though in college, it's all about the team score, they're still performing as individuals. I can help prepare them so that when they're standing in their wings, which is basically standing there waiting for the judge to salute them, I can prepare them so well that they will be calm, confident, and excited to get on the equipment. And I knew I could do that part of the job as well, if not better than anybody else in the country. And once I started being true to myself, we started having success, and I'll never, ever forget, there were a few different athletes that came up to me a few years later, and they said, Miss Val, you finally became a leader worth following because you're being true to yourself.
I love that. I love that you shared that because it's, right, Alan? It's That is what it's all about. But you had, you know, I mean, I hear it in your voice. I hear it in your passion. Your background was a fantastic gift, was everything those girls needed to have a leader. And the moment you stepped into that, you went, hey, this might not be traditional, but I got it.
Right. I did. I said, I can do this. I can do this as well as anybody. I just need to hire people, you know, to do everything I don't know how to do, which was the gymnastics part. But I think any great leader realizes they can't do it all. And any great leader surrounds themselves with people that are at the top of their game and bringing something to the table that the leader doesn't bring.
Yep.
And I think that was one of my greatest gifts as a head coach, was that I couldn't have an ego because I didn't know what the heck I was doing. So I had to ask a lot of questions.
You know, and
love that.
Yeah, and I think that talks directly to the point of how much any sport, or sometimes even just beyond sports, how much of it is mental. Because here we are looking at things that, you know, that we're just excited, or we're, you know, amazed at what people can do with their body, you know, these athletic skills that they have. But I think, you know, what I'm hearing is that part of your success was you went right to the mental part first, because that's the part that you knew. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Also, I loved going to class and rehearsal every day. And I came into this sport of gymnastics in the early 80s when a lot of the Eastern European coaches were coming over and taking over. And they were very, very, very successful. But their style of coaching was more of a dictator type of coaching than a motivating type of coaching. And that has permeated our country. Why? Because it works. Yep. Because you win medals. However, it stripped the joy of the process of learning. And I always felt the joy in the process, the hard process of learning.
So now,
and I feel there's a, when people hear me say that, they kind of poo-poo it. And there's a difference between fun and joy in athletics. Fun is like recess. Fun is let's go just play a pickup game of basketball. Joy comes from the challenge of something really difficult that you find your own self-motivation through the process, and then you achieve something that's really hard. That's the joy that fills you up.
Now, when you were talking about from the standpoint of learning, you know, what's amazing is that, you know, starting this at 22 years old, who would you say that your biggest mentor was?
Well, I didn't really have one until my second year as a head coach. I was 31 and I was walking through our student store and I found one of Coach John Wooden's books on leadership, and it opened up magically to his definition of success. And Coach Wooden had won 10 national championships as our basketball coach. He was hailed as the greatest coach of all time. And I read his definition of success, and it simply said success is peace of mind, which is a direct result in knowing that you have done your best. And I kept reading this because coaches, our definition of success is winning. Mm-hmm. I am hired to win. That's what UCLA is hiring me to do. And I kept reading his definition and searching for where he would talk about winning. And he never did. And I kept reading it over and over. And that's when I had the biggest aha moment of my life. Success is peace of mind in knowing you have done your best. I had been trying to mimic other people. And it wasn't until I figured out what I brought to the table that we started having success that translated into winning in athletics.
Well, I love that. And I'm not sure there's a better mentor out there. And again, you know, being a local Southern California person, and anybody else that's here knows who John Wooden is and knows what he brought, and not even so much just as a coach, but, as a motivational speaker, as a leader. I've also read his books, and that's a great mentor to have.
May I ask? Oh, sorry.
Yes.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Pat.
No, go ahead.
I just wanted to ask.
Gabriella. Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask you a little bit more about your method, because I'm not in the sports world, and I'm really interested in a little bit deeper about that successful coaching method that you specifically have.
Well, I firmly believe in coaching the person that is the athlete. And too many coaches, even at young ages, coaching young children, they only focus on the athletic part, the skills, the X's and O's, all of that. They don't focus on them as a human being. And I've always seen our athletes as they're these wonderful young women that have got so much more to offer the world than just their athletics. Mm-hmm. And if I could fill them up and develop, I always say, you know, when people say, what do you do? I say, I develop superheroes. That's what I do in my job. Mm-hmm. And if I can develop these young women into champions in life, it will translate to the competition floor versus only coaching them as athletes and you know, having these great athletes and expecting it to translate to life. It often doesn't. And including, you know, what you specialize in, Gabrielle, and that is kindness.
Yep.
And I noticed with our team, we had a few weeks ago, we were on the road, and I just saw these cracks in our foundation. And we didn't have a great meet. We did not compete brilliantly. We were okay, but we were not at our best. And I was noticing little things that they were doing that weren't necessarily rude, but they weren't kind, such as when we got on the airplane and the stewardess said, "How did you do?" And one of my athletes in front of me said, "Oh, yeah, we lost," and didn't even look at her, did not look her in the eye, just kind of dismissed her. And there were about four or five things like that that happened. And we had a meeting as soon as we got back, and I said, "You know, Bruins, there's, we have cracks in our foundation, and it's translating to our gymnastics. And it has to do with kindness and courtesy and civility." And there is never, ever an excuse in life to not be kind, ever. And they got it. They flipped it. We just got back from the Pac-12 championships and did really well in that meet. And in the press conference, they were asking, I was there with two of our athletes, and they asked them, you know, "You guys were just on fire tonight." And one of them, Caitlin Ohashi, the young woman who's gone viral so many times, she said, "You know, we just had a few meetings this week where Miss Val, you know, put the mirror up to us and showed us that our culture is not as strong as it should be with respect to being great human beings." And she says, "You know, we take such pride in being really great people that that is what you see on the competition floor."
Absolutely. And do you feel, talk about kind there for a second, do you feel that the disrespect also came a little bit because they put so much pressure on themselves without, you know, giving them that the kindness to self at the same time, so that there is this deflation when they're flying back and they go, you know, "We didn't make it," and, you know, are they particularly hard on themselves instead of being kind?
I do feel it's that, because we are the reigning national champions and there's all this media hype on us. I know that a big part of it was fatigue, because we were heading into finals.
Okay.
And you could see the emotional fatigue on them, which is another reason why we may not have competed as well. But once again, I don't care. When someone says something to you, you look them in the eye and you respond with kindness and respect, you know?
Absolutely. I love that you said that.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Well, that is my new plight in life right now, that I just feel like we need to change the culture in athletics in our country, and not just in gymnastics, but I really feel that as Coach Wooden helped me define my success, I feel like we parents and coaches, we need to restructure the definition of success. It can't be about winning, because winning doesn't include the process, the day-to-day process of feeling good about yourself. And when you have a young son or daughter who's in a sport, they may not be the most gifted in that sport, but that's okay. As long as they're learning really tough life lessons through the sport, that's what it's all about. Otherwise, if you don't believe in that, then the only reason you want to be in sports is for bragging rights. And to me, that's very shallow.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know what? We're going to take a break for everybody that's listening. I am so honored to be talking with Valerie Condisfield and Gabriella Von Ray. Gabriella is going to have to leave us. If you heard earlier, she's in France and she's about to catch a flight. Stay with us. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Valerie's new book, because that's one of the things that we're going to take what she's talking about, what she's doing in sports, and it really applies to our whole life. And that's the thing. So when we're talking about right now about being kind in sports and changing the way that we look at it, changing the culture, we need to do that across the board. I mean, we could pick almost anything. Let's, you know, it could be politics, it could be anything. We need to be focusing in this direction. So when we come back, we're going to talk about the book and how a lot of this applies to our life. So stay with us. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585 or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. I have on the show Valerie Condas Field, and we're going to talk a little bit about her new book, Life is Short, Don't Wait to Dance. So with that, Valerie, tell us a little bit about the book and what inspired you to write this.
Thank you. The book, I was doing a lot of speaking engagements the last few years, and every time I finished, I would get questions about where can I buy your book, and I didn't have a book. And the reason why I didn't feel I should write a book was because I am a voracious reader, and I felt like anything that is truthful has already been said for the last how many of thousands of years. I didn't feel like I had anything new to say that was of value. And finally, one of my friends said, you're right. If it's truthful, it has been said over and over and over again, but we need people in our generation to put it in our vernacular that will resonate with us. And so I said, okay, I'll write a book. And I wrote the book, and it's about how a ballet dancer choreographer became one of the winningest athletic coaches in the country and how I figured out how to do that. And as I mentioned earlier on your show, I have done things very non-traditionally because I was a ballet dancer. I've never been a gymnast, and I figured things out. And a few months before it was going to publication, I told my co-author, I said, you know, I can't publish this book. And he said, why not? And I said, because people are going to think they're going to glean all of this athletic information from the 7-time national championship coach, and they're going to read the book, and they're going to realize I'm a total whack job. And he looked at me very seriously, and he said, Miss Val, you are a whack job. That's why you have to write the book, because you give all of us permission just to be ourselves. And I said, okay, I'll write the book. So...
Well, share a little bit about what when you decided to name this. I mean, there's so many things, you know, directions you could have gone. Why did you decide to go with the "Don't Wait to Dance" part?
I think because it was a common thread throughout the whole book, and through the book, I talk about the metaphor of dance is anything that makes your heart sing. And it also hit me when I was writing the parts of the book about Coach Wooden. And my husband and I were very, very fortunate to be extremely close to him and his family. And the last few years of his life, he lived to be 99 and 9 months old. The last few years of his life when I was with him, people always said, Coach, you've lived an impeccable life. Do you have any regrets? And his eyes would glass over a little bit, and he would say, you know, my wife Nellie loved to dance. And he would say, I've never been a very good dancer, and I've always been very shy, so I never danced with my wife. And he said, if I had it to do all over again, I would dance with my wife.
I love
so it's
that.
An homage to Coach Wooden as well.
No, I love that. And and for anybody out there, just to give you a little bit of my impression of the book, was I really felt that, you know, this was a book that just had a huge amount of advice to anybody that's on a quest for success in anything. You know, it wasn't just focused on sports. It was success in life. And what I liked was, you know, you have this sort of a reassuring and inspirational tone as you're talking about how people can not only find success, but enjoy the journey. So,
well, absolutely. And you know, in every chapter, there's a little very simple to explain and simple to understand nugget, such as, I don't believe in the concept of perfection. Perfection doesn't exist. And there are a lot of coaches that say, perfect practice makes perfect. And I've never liked that. It's never resonated with me because there's not a perfect human being that's ever lived. So I don't believe in, and I don't teach our athletes to try to be perfect, especially in a sport that is based on the perfect tense. But we can strive for the illusion of perfection, and we strive for excellence. And how do we do that? You know what? Just today, figure out how to be 1% better. Mm-hmm. As a friend, as a spouse, in your job, whatever you're doing during your day, figure out what that looks like to be just 1% better. And imagine if at the end of the day, you can go to bed and you can go, whoa, and go back over your day and say, I really was a better friend. I was more honest. I gave more intention to my work. I was more kind to people. Wow, I was a 1% better version of myself today. That's pretty cool. Yep. And imagine what that will feel like at the end of the week.
Mm-hmm.
If that's your measure. And so there are little like nuggets like that. Like I don't believe in the word failure. Failure, and you hear that all the time in sports, the fear of failure. Well, I don't believe in the word failure. I don't believe it exists. Because anytime you attempt to do something and you don't achieve it, if you take the time to think about the process that you went through to do that, you will learn either what you should have done more of or better or not done. And whenever you learn something in life, how can that be failure?
Yep.
It can't. So get that word out of your vocabulary. So there are little things like that throughout the whole book that are the things that are resonating with people in the business world as parents, you know, outside of the athletic world, like you said.
You know, as you were talking about failure, it reminded me of a quote from Thomas Edison when he had mentioned that somebody had come to him and said, you know, I can't see how you can keep doing this. I can't keep doing this with you. You know, we've failed 900 times to try to figure out how to make this light bulb work. And he said, no, we haven't. We've successfully found 900 ways that it won't work.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And that's what Silicon Valley's been based off of. That's what their whole .com era has been based off of. If you're not failing multiple times a day, you're not working hard enough.
Exactly. I love it. We have some listener questions and comments. I want to make sure I get these in. And again, I want to thank those of you that take the time. I know that we have a lot of teachers that listen. And so we get the questions from them, and they'll send them in and say, you know, if you can please get this answered because, you know, I'm going to be in school at that time, but I'll listen, you know, during the evening or something through iTunes or something. So this one
That's
reads,
great.
Yeah, I love it. This one says, I ordered your book and look forward to adding to our reading list. I am a volunteer for our local chapter of the American Cancer Society. Working with patients who are undergoing treatment is very challenging as many are in such fear of dying and are still suffering the side effects of chemo and radiation, which at times do some damage to their body. Were there other regimes that helped you, and if so, are they in your book, or do you have resources or any recommendations? And this is from Virginia in California.
Virginia, thank you for the question. You know, I think that you get to an age in life where either you are hit by a horrible disease like cancer, or your family is, or you know somebody very close. None of us are immune to this. And my story is in the book. It's towards the end of the book. And when I got the call that I had a very aggressive type of breast cancer and had to get in to see the doctor immediately, as soon as I hung up the phone, I heard very clearly, be anxious for nothing and grateful for all things. And listeners, if you're, I don't know what your faith is, but, you know, whether you believe in cosmic energy or universal energy or the universe speaking to me or whatever it was, I felt that this was God speaking to me. And then I went home and I told my husband that I had breast cancer. And I told him that I had heard very clearly, be anxious for nothing and grateful for all things. And he said to me, that's from the Bible. Well, I had not read the Bible. And I went over to the Bible and I looked it up. And sure enough, it was in Philippians 4. And my world stopped because I heard this before I ever read it. And I knew it was a commandment. And just like anything in life, it was a choice as to whether I was going to obey or not. And I knew I would obey, but I didn't know how I was not going to be anxious. I'd just gotten diagnosed with a potentially fatal disease. And I went to my doctor the next day, and she told me, had I been diagnosed 10 years earlier, they had absolutely nothing for my type of breast cancer. Because I was diagnosed this year, she, and if I chose to go through a year of chemotherapy and surgery, she knew it would work. And at that moment, I understood the commandment. How I was not going to be anxious was through gratitude. Yep. I didn't have to get chemo. I got to get chemo because I live at a time that has the chemo. And switching that one word, have to get to, has changed my entire life, every day of my life since that moment, for the better. And I am very grateful that I lived at a time that has the medicine for the type of cancer that I have. And when I speak to people, and I speak a lot of cancer organizations, and, you know, there are people diagnosed with stage 4, metastatic cancer, the whole bit. I just feel like if you can switch your brain to gratitude that we live at a time of hope.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that many years ago that when you were diagnosed with stage 4, it was a death sentence. It no longer is that. It doesn't have to be that because of research. And we can have hope. And hope is very, very powerful.
I love that. Yes, I could not agree more. And Virginia, thank you for taking the time to send in the question. That is wonderful. We have another is a listener comment. This one says, love your title, and I believe that it applies to all ages. My father passed a year ago from pancreatic cancer, and it took quite a while for my mother to pull herself out of depression and the shock of his loss. They had been inseparable. They enjoyed biking, hiking, and skiing. She is just starting to attend events and spend time with her friends. She has even signed up for, in parentheses, dance classes, which inspired me to write you and highlight how much I love the title. I'm going to gift your book to my mom for her birthday next month, as I know she will love your story and your encouragement. Thank you. And this is from Julie in North Carolina.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you, Julie. And happy birthday to your mom. I hope she enjoys the dance.
Yes, definitely. So one of the things that that maybe a lot of people don't know is that you have announced that this will be your last season, that you're going to retire after this season. Outside of dancing, what are your future plans?
You know, it's I'm actually retiring because I want to enjoy my dance, the metaphor of all the things that make my heart sing. And I've been at UCLA for 37 years. I have really exhausted all that there is for me to learn in this environment, although I love it. I've loved every day that I've been able to come, that I've gotten to come to work. I don't have to come to work. I get to come to work. And when I got cancer, I realized that we all have an expiration date, and I just didn't know when mine was. And I have this bucket list of things. I want to produce an urban nutcracker. I wanted to write the book. I want to produce a course on John Wooden at UCLA or any other university that would like to have a course on John Wooden. We're talking about a few films based on our last national championship that was just a miracle. I've got projects coming up, and I want to do them while I still have the energy and the inspiration to do them well. And so that is the only reason why I've chosen to retire.
Well, I mean, I love the fact that, you know, you have all of these things to do. And I get accused of the same type of thing. They're like, well, geez, what are you going to do when you grow up? You seem to keep having a new thing that you want to do. But I think that's great. I think that's what keeps life exciting. I think it's what keeps us young. Again, if there's anything that I can do to help, you know, as you're putting something out there, if you want to help get the word out, you know, that's what I have said from the time I started this platform was, we're going to get the word out because we're going to continue to talk about things that major media doesn't want to talk about. If it's, you know, if it's too positive or whatever, they don't want to go into that stuff. So that's fine. We'll take it. So, you know, whatever we can do to help get the word out, I'm right there for you.
Thank you. That's, you know, and what you said, how you live your life is how I live my life. And it's the conversation I have with our seniors every year because there's no professional gymnastics for them to go to except the circus, Cirque du Soleil or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I always tell them it's not about the gymnastics. It's about all the life lessons that you've learned through this amazing sport. If you could stay another year, you would just be spinning your wheels. And that's not what life is about. Life is about being challenged mm-hmm. daily. Life is about having these massive adventures and figuring out how to achieve them. And that's when life is really in full bloom and full color. And when people say, what are you going to do? I say, you know what? All I really want is to be really challenged and really inspired by what I'm doing. I don't care what I do. I just want those two things to be a part of it. And I want to be able to do that until the day I die. I don't want to be sitting on a couch watching TV and reruns. I want to be living life until the day I die.
I love that. Now, we've been talking about what you've done. Well, what you've done to help your students. But I just had this thought. What would you say you've learned the most from your students?
The thing I've learned the most is that kindness and compassion is a far greater tool to teach from than dictating. And I don't know what the other word is, but there's so, you know, in the paradigm of being a coach, a lot of negative words come up, like just ruthless, mm-hmm. and that coaches think athletes need to be degraded and need to be torn down in order to make them want to play well for you. And I have learned the exact opposite. That when it is tough love. You know, mm-hmm. my tough love for my athletes is when they're sitting across from me and I tell them very honestly and without apology how they have screwed up or what their actions look like. And I always tell my athletes, you know, you need to be able to speak honestly and respectfully. And if you are soft pedaling something, you're not being respectful because what you're telling that person is they're not strong enough to handle the truth. And as long as you speak the truth with respect
mm-hmm.
and compassion for the person, they will blossom. That is why I love the fact that we have continued to win championships over the last 3 decades, because I've proven that when you coach the person and motivate the person and develop the person, instead of just worrying about their athletics, you get a much brighter response from them and product. You know, when you look at athletes that are in the zone,
mm-hmm.
you know, look at when Kobe was playing, he's in the zone. When athletes are in the zone and everything is clicking, they're having a ball.
Yep.
They're not so focused that when you get ultra, ultra focused, you may be able to execute better than your teammate, than the opponent, but it's not coming from a place of this release of joy. And when athletes are in the zone, they're joyful. And I don't, like, parents, don't ever, ever, ever take the joy out of your children learning anything. And we need to we really, like you said, we need to have tough conversations. We need to restructure the dialogue that parents are having with their children. Don't ask them how many points they scored. Ask them, did you work hard at the things you don't like to do? Don't
like
ask
it.
Them, did they beat so-and-so? Ask them, how are you respectful to your teammates today? And then have a safe space. You know, once you get home, there's no talking about gymnastics or your sport. And if they want to get up, it's one thing, but you don't bring it up. You let your children know you love them as people, and their athletics is just a part of it.
Well, the book is called Life is Short, Don't Wait to Dance. The author is Valerie Condis Field. Valerie, I just really want to acknowledge you and thank you not only for coming on the show, but for everything that you're doing, because I'm a believer that what we do with the younger generation is passed on. You've now been doing this now for over 30 years, so you have put a lot of people out there that I see as this, you know, this giant, you know, pyramid going in the right direction of positive kindness and people that are looking at their life in a different way. So thank you for that.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate all the great work you're doing and taking that risk of being courageous and talking about things that people don't want to talk about.
Well, thank you for that. Now, for everybody out there, please be sure and put on your calendar to tune in next Monday when we will be joined by Britton Devereaux to discuss treating addiction and preventing chronic illness. And if you get the opportunity, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com, or you can subscribe to the show through iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It helps us reach more people, and we greatly appreciate it. The next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us, spread the word. Remember, you know, what you pay attention to. If you're paying attention to things that involve kindness, that involve positive things, you're going to pass that on to other people. It's just a win-win situation all the way around. So be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.